Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here we are in the rugby dungeon for one more podcast before Christmas. A bonus podcast just to say thank you for listening this year and in what has been a very, very trying, and will be for a lot of people, a very trying festive period. We thought we'd do what we could to try and ease that slightly with just an extra little podcast. A mailbag podcast with some of the correspondence we've had and just some discussions that will lead to. I'm Tim, that's JB.
Hello, Tim.
And that's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Actually, do you know what I'm going to start with? I'm going to start with this. If you've been listening to the podcast for several years, you might remember this. JB, do you remember doing this? Do you remember your song that you made?
I do remember my song. I was very proud of that.
It's the most rugbyest time of the year. Discussions, concussions, collusion with Russians, Johnny May's fixed career. It's the most rugbyest time of the year. It's the most professional season we've had. Props getting lean, mince pie flavoured protein, we are catching the ball. It's the most professional season of all. Passes be fizzing, back lines they be sizzling, and fly halves be playing gung-ho. Men stood drunk at the bar, self-hat stuck in their car, Alison Pollock shouting, oh no, my ball! It's the most rugbyest time of the year.
Wow. Oh, that finished abruptly. Apologies for that.
Yes.
Amazing.
So I've got to say, I made that 3 years ago. Amazing how many of those things are still in the news.
Yeah. although Donald Trump fixed career, not Johnny May in the end.
Yes, that's a good point. Well, no, hang on. Johnny May loosened it up.
Yeah, exactly. He was like opening the jar. Johnny Marr loosened it. Trump just came and popped the lid off.
I didn't realise how out of tune I was on those long notes.
Mate, I loved it. It's great.
You started off great, beautifully in tune, and then maybe some of the high ones didn't quite hit.
Couple of flat notes, but we'll let you off.
Yeah, I'll have to redo that.
Certainly a lot better than I could have done.
For sure. I missed Phil's wonderful Stollen last week that you made.
It was delicious, actually. Absolutely delicious.
Oh, yeah. Sadly, I've finished it all now, Tim. Maybe in the new year. Well, maybe next year.
That's fine. Absolutely fine. We are at Rugby Podcast on Twitter and contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Let's dive into the mailbag, JB. What's going on?
Right, so what I'll do is, if you've just emailed us, I'll say thank you for your email, because we've got it, so we can acknowledge it. And if there is a question, I will read it, and then we'll try and answer that question. Does that sound reasonable?
Sounds reasonable to me, mate.
So thank you to Lawrence Hill. I really thought it was Lauren Hill when I first saw it, but I know
that thing.
Well, I know she's a massive Egg Chasers fan, actually.
Wyclef Jean is as well.
Is he?
Like all of the Fugees, massive rugby fans.
Yeah, it's weird though, because they no longer talk. So, you know, if they were going to come back together, it'd be over rugby, I would hope.
Yep.
So, Let me have a look. So we've got Dunk. I don't know what Dunk's full name is, but maybe he wouldn't like us to mention his full name anyway.
Okay.
Recent news of BT's Premiership deal potentially off. Could Tim please use all of his influence to influence at BT? By the way, that's considerable, to get them to buy the rights for the Pro 14 or whatever number it will be. So, Tim, you do have quite a lot of influence.
Obviously.
Yeah, would you like BT to be with the Pro 14?
I think for rugby fans, it would be great to have multiple products all on in the one place. I haven't watched a single Pro 14 game since it went to Premier Sport.
That's a good point. I pay for them. I pay, I think, £100 a year to watch half of the Pro 14 final every year. I mean, that's literally what I do, because I never tune in. I have tried to... I watched a build-up once of a Premier Sports production. Actually, I understand that it's the same company that does the BT stuff, but it doesn't feel like it. So I got so far, I thought, I can't watch this. This is just not good enough.
I've got a Twitter DM from Jonathan Bamf here.
Oh, yes, please.
Who said, firstly, a big thank you for the pod and keeping us going through COVID. It felt almost strange to listen to... oh, blah, blah, blah. Sorry, he says... anyway, I'm not going to just read out loads of amazing things that he's talking about.
Go on, do it.
No. I'll jump to the bit where he gets to the question. It's all... yes, thank you, Jonathan. That's lovely, lovely stuff you're saying. Anyway, he says, a question for you to ponder. I met a great girl about 18 months ago.
This is for us to ponder.
Who has no interest in rugby, but was open to being convinced. Good.
Okay.
You've got an open-minded girl. Good. My master plan was going to be a few visits to Twickenham, Rome away, etc. Then she would be hooked. But COVID scuppered this year.
Oh, no.
The question is, where to go first next year when I'm able to? Iconic rugby experiences with a good bit of après match. He said he went to Cardiff Uni, so Wales under the roof will be mandatory. But on the club side, Exeter, Ulster, Claremont. So he basically said, I only signed up to Twitter, or he called it Twatter, purely to say thank you for the podcast and to give you a potential topic. So there you go.
Excellent.
So when you're able to again, where should he make a beeline for? Particularly as he's trying to convert his...
Okay.
His other half.
So the most important thing is about this question is he needs to convert his other half. So the actual rugby side of this is not important. You know, so he's right. If you want great rugby, you don't go to Rome, do you? You go to Rome for great Negronis.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So he's already got half the equation right there. Now, if I was to give him advice, I would say there's only one thing on my calendar. No, there's two things on my calendar which I'd be tempted to do. One, the inaugural Monaco Sevens.
I mean, ooh, yes.
I mean, how can that go wrong? So not only do you have the party atmosphere of Sevens, you're doing it in Monaco. I can't think of how that can go. If the rugby is rubbish... Well, actually, nobody knows what the rugby is like at Sevens because they're all so drunk. I mean, there
it's
are...
It's irrelevant.
There are stadiums of people that have never seen a game of Sevens who are at the Sevens.
That is a whole day thing, though. Whereas you're kind of, you're in Monaco, you're not going to be drinking in the bars in Nice, up the road, up the coast.
You could do.
You're going to be in the stadium the whole time watching Sevens. Unless you're JB, when JB would be like, after half an hour, should we go?
There's no point staying here.
When JB and I went to the London Sevens with friend of the pod, Ryan Kiesel, last year, 2019, yeah. Which was a brilliant day out. The most rugby we watched all day was when the Premiership final was on and we stayed inside for 80 minutes.
Yes.
We were outside intermittently during the game to watch little glimpses of Sevens. It's kind of irrelevant, the rugby.
It's things like, do you want to go outside and hang out with Brian Habana? No, I'm watching the rugby.
My shout would be Claremont. Because for two reasons here. It was a beautiful town, gothic architecture. It's gorgeous. Just sitting out in the piazza and having an espresso under the dappled shade of a tree in the little gothic square is gorgeous. The atmosphere is unbelievable, and it's something that every rugby fan should tick off. But here's the other thing.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who funds Claremont?
The tyre company.
Yeah, which tyre company?
Continental.
Michelin,
of course, yeah.
Michelin being Cape... Which is where the Michelin restaurant book came from. That had something to do with roads, didn't it? And
yes,
travelling.
That's exactly right.
it was to convince people to use their cars.
Yeah.
Because people had these vehicles and no one had was used to traveling long distances because you had no way of doing it before that. So the book was written to highlight good places so you could actually use your car.
There you go.
Very cool. I like that. Anyway, it's got the highest density of Michelin star restaurants anywhere.
That's a brilliant shout, actually. So yeah, that is a great shout.
So foodie paradise, amazing rugby mecca, and a gorgeous town.
Well, my last one was going to be something completely random, which is, as I understand it, Xavier Gorbajosa used to run the Six Valleys rugby tournament, which is played during ski season on snow.
Oh, yeah, you have mentioned this before.
Yeah, you have.
Now, Ian Bolshaw brought this up to me, and it's basically a little bit of a knees-up for ex-professionals and ex-internationals. So if you want to combine skiing and rugby, maybe look into that one too.
Mm.
Now, I think those are sensational suggestions from both of you, but I'm going to take the opposite tact, actually, and suggest you do what I do with my wife, who doesn't particularly like rugby, is let her do her sewing and baking and dressmaking and crafty stuff.
And so life-saving, don't forget.
And very important life-saving, so that I can go to the rugby with the boys when I get the opportunity, the few weeks of the year that I get the opportunity to do so, I can enjoy it with them and a few pints. My suggestion is, next year, whatever you do, wherever you go with your lovely girlfriend, next year, definitely get to the Tier 2 Part 3 that we will be doing as soon as the world allows us to.
Yes. Alternatively, if you do want to put her off rugby so you can just go away with the boys, take her to Sail Sharks, the AJ
what?
Bell.
Come on.
I'm joking.
Go by car.
That's funny, though, is it?
I'm joking. Well,
some jokes are funny.
So there you go. Hopefully that sorted you out. Jonathan, thank you very much for your message and your kind words. JB.
Yeah, so a big thank you to Rob Spink, whose father was an air marshal, unbelievably.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a big deal. Ethan John Banfield has emailed us too, so thank you to him. And Ben McKenzie basically wants to bring up something which has been very, 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 very annoying, and I can certainly see where he's coming from. Based on resourcing the ruck, he has pointed out that lots of your mates, Tim, on the telly are using the word learnings, which is not a word.
We have to take our learnings.
Where is this from?
Yeah.
It's awful, isn't it? I've never noticed it.
I've not really thought about it, but DORs say this, don't they, in players?
Yeah.
We took our learnings.
Because it doesn't sound as...
Lesson. It's a lesson. It's not learnings. It's a lesson. There's a word for it already. It's a lesson.
It doesn't... I'm just looking it up because it doesn't sound... As you're saying it, JB, it sounds a bit weird, but it didn't immediately sound offensive to me.
What?
Yes. Is it correct to say learnings? Yes, the plural of learning is learnings. It's as established expressions as new experience as a medical term. Now that is from, that's not from an Oxford dictionary or a Cambridge dictionary.
But it's acceptable.
JB, you have really taken umbrage with the word, with Stuart Hogg a few weeks ago when he said we'll learn from it when he was in a Scotland shirt.
Oh yeah.
Learn from losing badly. You really didn't like, did you?
No, because if you're the international captain, you shouldn't be learning. You should have the answers. I don't have time for learning right now. I'm paying you so much money, you're not here to learn. You're here to win.
we're on a journey. I think probably you dislike in general. And I can understand it. The whole, we're on a journey, it's learning, it's a step. We'll come back stronger, all the rest of it.
If I wanted someone to learn, I'd play Josh Hodge. Josh Hodge would score every single game.
Is he in your fancy rugby draft team, by the way?
He is, actually, yeah.
Oh, right, I see. Okay.
If I wanted someone to win, I'd start Stuart Hogg. So that's how it goes. Oh, mind you, to be fair, he was in a Scotland shirt. So, you know, anyway, same principle applies.
But then again, you know, all the great people say a great character is someone who's constantly learning and striving to get better. On a journey, JB.
What a journey. Love it. Absolutely love it.
Life's about the journey, not the destination.
Absolutely.
JD. You need to get that in massive pink letters above your fridge or on your hall.
or just
paint it to my wall.
Or a tattoo.
Exactly.
Tattoo. Yeah, because I've got many tattoos. So something which you told me, Tim, right? And it really struck home, which is, if you like a phrase that much, remember it.
Yeah, I said that to someone who said they wanted to get a tattoo of a phrase or something. That was my response. I said,
write it down.
Just remember it. and the other thing with tattoos and stuff, although it's just a personal preference, so I'm being flippant here, but like I would assume the default position, for example, is that you love your mum.
Yes.
I would assume that.
I would assume that too, yeah.
So just kind of stuff like a heart and mum, I'd guess that.
Well, actually, I assume that everyone without a mum tattoo is basically an orphan.
Exactly. Or, you know, your kids' names. Yeah, you can remember them.
You can. Well, you said something else. You said write it down.
Write it down.
Write it down.
Write it down.
So do you know what I've done? What? This is serious now. I've been writing down words that I've never previously heard or don't know what they mean. The hope that I will remember them and use them in the future. Do you want to know what these words are?
Yeah.
Explication. That's to explain.
Sorry. I was wrong. Huh? I agree. No, I'm joking. I'm just joking. Other ones on your list. No, go on. Extrication, did you say?
Explication.
Oh, explication. I know. So extrication is taking yourself out of something. Explication.
It's basically to explain, which is rubbish. Insouciant. Concatenation.
Hello, Susie Dent.
Acidious.
Not insidious. Acidious.
Acidious.
Is that just acidic?
Acidiously. I think it means careful.
Assiduous. Is it assiduous?
Assiduous it is, yes.
Okay.
Deracinated.
What's deracinated?
To deracinate is to take someone away from their roots, to remove someone. You know, if I was to deracinate you from society, I'd remove you from society.
You see, anyone who would use that word instead of saying...
I'd remove you from society.
I'd remove you from society. Yeah. I'm going to deracinate you. There's no need. Although, Stephen Fry, people, you have to be like Brian Blessed, Stephen Fry, someone like that, to be able to pull that off.
Incongruous.
That's against an alternative opinion.
Incipient.
Insipid. Is that like something to do with
incipient?
Incipient. What do you reckon, Phil?
I don't know. Incipient. I'm struggling with a lot of these, to be honest. Incipient.
I want to say this is appellation. I've actually forgotten some of these. Appellation. A-P-P-E-L.
Appellate, it's a mountain range.
No, it's not. A-P-P-E-L-L.
Well, what was incipient, by the way?
Incipient is... 2 seconds, mate. It's a starting point of an investigation, basically.
Like
to begin.
A beginning. Okay, yeah. Cool. Appellation is a mountain range. I know that.
Not in this context. So A-P-P-E-L-L-A-T-I... Oh,
is it to appeal something? Because there's like an appellate court in America is an appeals court.
Not quite, no. Phil.
No idea. Appellation.
A name or a title. So yeah, you are right. Yeah. So the appeal. So the appellant. So it's the same sort of, yeah.
Okay.
And it's last two. Derivation.
To derive something.
Yeah, that's very easy. And Malthusian.
You'll
know this one, Tim, I reckon.
Yeah, this is named after someone.
It is.
Is it not bad? Like mad is... Mal is bad, isn't it?
Yes, like malevolent. It is, but that's, you're not on the right... You're not thinking along the right lines here.
It's about... Yeah, it's like science, I'm thinking of it. It's like a graph shape. Thing.
Almost. Malthusian is basically a hatred of people. So,
hatred is bad.
Yeah. So,
as in, it's a negative. There's a negative derivation of that word.
But Malthusian is named after someone, and the idea is, a Malthusian wants, if I'm getting this correct, wants there to be less people. So, in effect, it's a hatred of people. So, you might say that the green agenda is a Malthusian agenda because they want to reduce the population in order to save the planet.
Okay.
Do you see what I mean?
Okay.
That's how I understand it. Not that I agree with it. I'm just collecting the words. That's all I'm doing. I'm just collecting the words.
So you want to kill people, JB?
Yeah. So thanks to Will Pownell for getting
Why were you looking? Why were you coming across the word Malthusian in 2020, JB? Yeah, I didn't think you were quite as cerebral as you were, JB. Clearly, I was wrong.
There we go.
I apologise.
So, JB, your next challenge is to use one of those on one of the future pods.
Yes.
Because I, like you, I've done that. Every time I read a word that I don't know, I make a point of looking it up. But then I just forget it and I never use it ever again, never think about it ever again.
Well, I think you've only got a certain amount of space for a certain number of words. And if you're not using it all the time, like, I'm never going to use, I don't know, assiduous instead of careful or whatever the word is.
Well, maybe you should do.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Maybe I should do.
Maybe make a point of using one of them.
It's going to end up sounding like, you know, there's a...
Friends.
I was going to say, the episode of Friends where Joey writes a letter and goes through a thesaurus for every word. Yeah.
So, Gary Wynn writes, how about penalty kicks score both three points and 7 points? As in, if you were to kick the ball over the post, you get 3 points. In addition, make it so if you can kick the three and touch the ball down over the try line, then you get 7. That would really add a new dimension to the penalty kick.
I don't understand.
So I think...
Can you read that again, the way he's written it?
As in, if you kick the ball over the post, you get 3 points. In addition, make it so if you can kick the three and touch that same ball down over the try line, then you get 7.
So you could score a try from a penalty kick.
Yeah.
So like, you've got to...
Send Lewis Rees-Zammit after it.
Yeah. Your teammates have got to run as fast as the ball travelling in the air. It's got to land within the in-goal area. You've got to catch it before the opposition.
You'd have more chance of scoring that at Sandy Park where there's a giant dead ball area.
Yes. Yeah. So you could only possibly have a chance with kicks of a certain distance. As in... If it's from the, I don't know, 60-metre line, 50-metre line, no one can run fast. You've got to kick it so hard that no one can run fast enough.
You would tactically have goal kickers who could do like basically a pitching wedge kick that went really high, but just over the, not very far forwards.
Exactly.
Well, I hate to say this, but I think this rule nearly exists anyway.
Because... You can score a try because it happened...
Santiago Cordero
for Bordeaux last week against Southampton.
So here's a thought for you, right? You line up your kick for sticks and you are in front of the posts. Every opposition player is going to get underneath the posts, right? And they might charge it down. What would happen if you kicked it to the sideline?
You're not allowed to do that.
Why?
You're not allowed to deliberately miss.
Yes. You can't do exactly... It's the rule to stop exactly that.
Unsporting conduct.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
But it's in the laws, I think.
That would be cool if it wasn't in the laws, though.
Yeah, or...
Because it's almost like... it's kind of like a quick line-out, or... If the opposition aren't paying attention, like a quick tap penalty. If the opposition aren't paying attention and they've left... Oh, you're going to leave a winger out there? Okay, well, I'm going to change and go. Bosh. Done. I think, actually, now I think about it, I reckon that should be removed as a law. And if any team is stupid enough not to cover it, and you've got someone like Finn Russell who can chuck it on a sixpence... Fair enough. Do you know what it's like stealing a base in baseball?
Yes. Well, hang on. The laws say something, don't they? Which is you've got to try and kick it, but you can always have a bad kick. That, you know, that happens.
You have to be very good. It would have to be someone as skillful as Finn Russell to make it look like you were trying to and miss it enough and have it in a way that a player can gather the ball.
So what you do is it would have to be from one touchline, relatively close in, so the angle's narrow. So it could be legitimate that you could miss this. Maybe there's a bit. Maybe there's a bit of a wind. You tell Johnny May stand on the touchline. He doesn't have far to go. And then all you need is a couple of degrees out. Everyone's underneath the posts. Johnny May catches it. Boom, down. Owen Farrell could do that all day long.
What other sporting conduct laws are there in the game like that?
Like no idea.
You're not allowed to dummy from the base of a ruck anymore. Do you remember when people used to do that?
No, I don't actually. That's always been a law from what I can remember.
No, I remember. It was always...
Is it W from scrums you're not allowed to do?
Maybe, but I remember Welsh scrum
halves. Yeah, you're right.
Welsh scrum halves used to dummy from rocks all the time when I used to go and play, teams.
Always. Unbelievable.
Well, they're just really skillful. Cheeky little buggers. I can't think of any other sporting conduct laws. What are they?
No idea. I know you're
like against the spirit of the game type thing.
I remember conceding a penalty because my teammate would scream as he went into contact, and growl, go into contact. No, and sportsmanlike conduct. So that was the end of that.
There was one which I'd not seen before in the Edinburgh Sail game this weekend, which was Postlethwaite. He got tackled. The tackler rolled on the wrong side, and the tackler was trying to crawl out of the way. And Postlethwaite held him in, as in he held his legs so that the tackler could not get out of there to try and get a penalty. And it was Romain Poix. The words he used were trapping, which I'm not sure that comes in the. I'm not sure trapping comes in the law book. No. However, I think it was the correct thing to do, as in the penalty was given in the right way.
It's a bit like when scrum halves see a lazy runner and just deliberately whang it at the player to steal a pen.
I like that. Don't be
which,
there.
So, I've seen referees as well say,
sorry no, to the laws.
You saw him. You can't just throw it. You can't actively throw it into him.
I think it happened last weekend in a Premiership game or in a European game.
Well, it fairly famously happened to Scott Brits, and they gave a penalty, and the referee said, look, I don't make the laws, I just enforce them. This is in the laws, you're in the way, it's a penalty. I don't like it, it's a penalty. But other refs have been, we're not having that.
Yeah, because a scrum half basically looks for the player and like a heat-seeking missile goes for the player rather than just avoid the player.
Yeah.
Again, I think don't be there. That's fine. Let me just get... Okay, so thank you to Dan Reeve. We actually answered his question about Dan McFarland last week.
Was the question, does Tim...
love Dan McFarland.
Which DOR is Tim's new blossoming love for?
That was exactly it. Now, Jack Penrose has given us all sorts of fodder here. So, first of all, he wants us to make a 15 made up only of 13s. And the reason he said this is... because Eddie Jones likes to put as many 13s in his team as possible, and is he picking the team much like a school coach does for his team, which is just pick all the best players regardless of where they play.
Okay.
And put so can we do it? Yeah, maybe we probably can.
Yeah, you probably could. Manny Tuolangi would be a prop.
Bastereau
would be another prop.
Oh yeah, yeah. Actually, yeah, you could. Barbary could be a hooker.
Barbary or Tom Youngs, former centres. Yeah, what are the great 13s would I have in other positions? Chris Harris could probably do a job as a open side flanker or a blind side maybe.
Yeah, he's bloody brilliant.
Definitely.
Atkinson as a lock.
Yeah. Is there another tall lock somewhere? Someone like Yozhong back in the day.
Vaka Tower I'd have as a number 8.
Yeah, or as a 13. I'd be tempted to go with that one.
Slade would be a 10.
What about the guy?
Henry Slade would be a 10. Ollie Lawrence would be hooker.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Barbary's not in hooker yet.
Joe Marchant on the wing.
Yeah, nice.
JJ on the other wing.
Yep, you could do that. And then Elliot Daly at fullback. Easy. That was easy.
Scrum after the one. We've got a real diminutive little 13.
Yeah. Well,
is there one? I can't think of one. I'd have Van Rensburg as a prop, actually. Maybe Manu as a 6.
Yeah, like that.
So that answers that. Jack also wants to know, do you think it's a good idea to keep the Heineken Cup condensed so that we could play it all in one go rather than break it up?
No, this format has to go as soon as possible. It's not good.
But what about the principle of just keeping the whole thing as a one solid tournament? So finish a Premiership and then play.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. Yeah. Yes, we talked about this before. In fact, I know Phil suggested it in how you break the season up, and I really like the idea. And if they bring in the World Club Tournament, which I gather they're trying to broker, then that would be necessary. I like that.
Yeah, it kind of... there's some things I don't like about it, some things I do like. I like the way that the traditional season is broken up, as in you kind of know where your Six Nations come, and they come in like little blocks of two, and you know when it's going to happen. But with all that said, replicating more like the Southern Hemisphere, where you have your dedicated Super Rugby window, your dedicated Mitre Cup or ITM Cup or Currie Cup window, and then your probably two international windows, I think it could be better, and it allows the narratives to flow better for the kind of more casual fans.
Yes.
As in, you can remember, it's easy remembering some of the results over a 7 or 8 week window rather than a 48 week playing window that we currently have at the moment.
There we go.
Oh, by the way, one thing that we couldn't have known about because we were recording the podcast while it was happening, but a lovely moment where, oh crikey, the policeman's name was forgotten. Matt Ratana.
Who?
Matt Ratana.
The
policeman.
Yes.
Who was killed? Really tragically, was mentioned in Sports Personality of the Year. A really lovely little piece on him, and seemed like a real good bloke, and a lot of people in the game of rugby, fans of rugby who know him through rugby and the people that he coached and played with had a lot of good things to say about him. So that was really nice.
Good.
Just thought I'd say that.
Mm. Who won the award which no one cares about?
I don't know. I just know about the Matt Ratana.
Oh, good. Because if it's not Lewis Hamilton, it's absolute outrage.
Oh, it will be.
It has to be Lewis Hamilton.
And I just couldn't wait to hear his speech.
Hamilton wins...
Lewis Hamilton is the finest sportsman that we've produced in a long... He's definitely the finest racing driver. I could not care less about what he has to say about anything else, but he's definitely the finest racing driver.
Yeah, he won it. Jordan Henderson was second, and Holly Doyle came third. Good on you, Holly.
Mm.
And Jordan Henderson and Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, good.
How do you rate Holly Doyle's
performance? Good. Yeah, really good, really good.
Yeah, I agree.
Phil?
She's raced some races.
Who are we talking about, boys?
She's a jockey.
Oh, right. I'm like, please God, do not be like a women's rugby player or something, and I'm going to look like an absolute... I'm going to look like a fascist or something. Jesus. Oh, right, she's a jockey. No, I have no idea who she is.
But... Yeah, I don't follow any horse racing in any capacity, whether it's men, women, or indeed the horses.
Yeah. Do you know, my favourite sports story of this year is the outrage over jockeys doing cocaine. What difference does it make if the man riding the athlete is doing cocaine?
I think it might... I don't need to tell you why. It's a good joke. You know why. I'm not going to explain it.
Absolutely ludicrous. Right. Matthew Moore.
Don't take drugs. Drugs are bad, okay?
Matthew Moore. Instead of getting rid of the knock-ons, keep that law as it is, but change the knock-on advantage to be more like football advantage. A knock-on isn't penalised as long as the other team gains the ball. The advantage is over straight away. Well, we kind of touched on this a lot already, but this law exists, doesn't it, in the ladies' game, I understand?
The COVID...
Yes.
COVID rules.
Yeah. Which I like, actually. I mean, as long as the other team get the ball.
That's an interesting... That's a good first step that along the way to, you know, investigating getting rid of the knock-on. Yeah, I kind of agree. If a knock-on, as long as the team gather it and have possession, advantage is immediately over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm fine with that. I want to see a bit more of the women's game. I tend to try and catch up on the highlights and the tries every week, but I've certainly not watched the full game since probably England were playing New Zealand in the World Cup final a few years ago. But I would be interested to see how that law variant is playing out. But that seems like a sensible kind of halfway house compromise between the full, completely eliminate the knock-on to where we are now.
Mm. Andrew Drayden writes, hi lads, hope you're all well. My ring fencing idea.
Oh, hello.
Here we go. So basically he's saying two divisions of eight. 14 regular season games plus one plus one or two playoff games. More teams, less games, yada, yada, yada. What do you think?
I understand the principle. You are playing less games.
Yep.
No, because you eliminate the rivalries that have lasted for, in some cases, well over 100 years.
Yeah. And so that would be worrying unless you do, you play everyone in your, unless you play everyone in each pool once. As in, he said, it's 2 times 8 lots of teams, 14 games.
Like the Pro 14.
Yeah, but Pro 14 is a bit different again because you play all of your national rivals twice, and then everyone in your pool twice. Oh, I can't. But they still get through 20 odd games. It's only slightly reduced from the Premiership schedule.
I would never not want to have Saracens versus. Well, I'm trying to think of an example now of what it would be.
Leicester at the moment.
Saracens Leicester, for example.
Yeah.
If it were north-south and you drew the line somewhere in the Midlands.
Yeah. And the other thing that would concern me would be the 16 teams.
So the 16. You'd have to get three extra ones in addition to the 12 currently in the Premiership. Saracens, then presumably it'd be Ealing and two others.
Yeah, so my problem with this is it sort of answers its own question. Why ring fence two? Why ring fence one league, or why ring fence two leagues? You've got the same. You basically got the same issue. So you ring fence because you don't want the jeopardy of relegation. Okay, but then also you don't want the dead rubber games. So to do this, you have a halfway house where you just split the league in other league in two. Nobody cares about the eight teams in the lower division. I know this because the championship exists and nobody really watches it, right? So all of a sudden you've got eight teams playing a lower standard of rugby that no one really cares about. You've also changed the problem of the dead rubber game to the bottom of the league, which is already less important, and you've not really solved the financial issue for the top teams because presumably they'll be getting bigger gates, bigger TV money, bigger everything. So if you get a ring fence, you've got to ring fence one league, and then somehow you've got to get around the Jeopardy situation because Jeopardy is important. And the only thing I can think of is we have a naughty step, and that is a legitimate thing. But what you can't do is just kick the can down the road because eventually you will get to the bottom of the Dross League and nothing matters.
I mean, I hear that, and what's trying to be solved there is trying to reduce the number of games.
Yeah.
And I totally get that. I think you look at the Pro 14, and the one thing the Premiership has over that. And then when you look at Super Rugby and you see how much better the Aotearoa tournament was, that's the same as the Premiership. You've got these relationships between fans, rival sets of fans, and that is what makes the Premiership and what, by contrast, means no one gives a damn when Ospreys go to Southern Kings.
Yeah. So, Phil, anything to add to that?
Not really. I totally agree with your points, JB. Well, both of your points, actually, on the kicking the can down the road. It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
And also the importance of the rivalries. You've got to have those rivalries. Now, I would like to see fewer games, fewer Premiership games.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how you square the circle with the current state that the league is in, the current league position, and the current state that finances are in.
Yeah, I think the only way it could happen is, do you remember there was a time where there was genuinely a time, I was living in Bath when this happened as well, Bristol nearly folded and Bristol and Bath nearly joined together and were going to build a new stadium in between Bristol and Bath in Keynsham.
That's right, they were, weren't they?
And it got pretty close to being a joint Bristol and Bath team.
Do you know who nearly formed up with Sale back in the day?
Yorkshire? Leeds Carnegie?
Nope. Two of the biggest amateur clubs in the northwest,
Broughton Park Waterloo. And Wilmslow.
Broughton Park and Sale were nearly formed up to be the same club. They had the meetings and the EGM, and then the Broughton Park members voted it down.
So that, something like that happening is the only way it could happen. But then I don't know where you would make that happen. It would have to be something like Bristol and Bath that are right next to each other, but they're not going to... That rivalry, no, it just wouldn't work. It wouldn't work.
Excellent. So thank you to Matt Grindrod for emailing us. He likes the podcast so much, he sometimes turns off his kettle so he can hear us better. I mean, that's quite phenomenal.
It's a commitment.
I'd like to say thank you to John for emailing in. I'm going to say Dr. John. He's not a medical doctor. He's a doctor in game theory.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. How interesting is that?
So, now you're talking.
Yeah, so I did ask him to apply some game theory to rugby.
Game theory. So should my orcs attack the elves?
Exactly right. That's exactly right. Should my space marines...
Should I use my potion?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Harry Rod has also emailed in to talk about basically the same thing we've spoken about before regarding the knock-on.
Nice one, Harry. While you're finding something, I'll just say we'll make these little mailbag things a little occasional. They'll pop up. Maybe monthly, maybe more than monthly, whatever. But email us, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. That's contacteggchasers@gmail.com or DM us on Twitter @rugbypodcast and with your thought, your starting point, and I'm sure other people will chip in on some of the things we talk about.
Yep. Absolutely. Right, okay, here we go.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Sorry, go on.
I've got one here. It's from... hold on a second, I've lost it now. Worcester Warriors fan Carl says, man crush, boys. Your man crush. I mentioned it on the last podcast, Maxi Machinot. I'm sort of stealing that one off Phil a little bit.
Yes. Oh, there's so many handsome French players. Machinot, Brice Doulan, who I mentioned last week. Entomac.
Yeah, I saw a picture of...
Penaud.
I saw a picture of Gitoun in doing some modelling for some clothing.
Looks great.
What a dashing man. Seriously handsome man. Yannick Nianga as well, having met him at Racing.
He looks great,
isn't he? He's so cool.
Isn't he cool? And he wears the Craig Doyle body warmer blazer combo.
Yeah.
Always a sign of a combo.
He pulls that off, yeah. Yeah, so there you go. There's a couple. All French.
Yeah, I'm not going to say man crush per se, but if I could look and play like a player, I could look like this player plays when he plays the game, I would choose Louis Picamon. I mean, it's just such a dominant, easy way of playing.
Very alpha.
Very alpha, isn't it? sidestep? No. Space? No. Forearms? Yes. Bang.
He's like a slightly more mature version of Alfie Barbary.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely pickables. One of my favourite all-time players there.
Another one I'll go for, who's not French but plays in France, is Victor Vito. Very, very handsome man.
I'm going to pluck a blast from the past. Again, when I was living in Bath, occasionally on a night out, you would see Ollie Barkley.
Looking great.
My goodness me. he's so attractive that he never, ever had to... He could be one of those guys that just goes out and is 100% with the lads the whole night, a proper... lad on a night out, and then just 2 minutes before he decides to go, right, come on, to whoever he wants.
He's a handsome man.
Devilishly handsome.
He used to get in a lot of trouble, though, from what I remember.
He's a loose cannon, I think.
Yeah. Good. Ethan Banfield, again, asks, basically, who would be our Lions 9, 10 and 10 and 12 combination?
10 and 12 is easier to pick than 9, as we've already established.
Is it easier?
On the recent podcast.
Well, 12 is an issue.
12 is an issue.
So if 12 is Farrell, then your 10 is not that easy, is it?
That's a good point. So 9, yeah. Nine, my pecking order currently, although anyone could take this, is Gareth Davis. First choice 9. Connor Murray is looking better than he has done the last couple of weeks, so he's definitely got the bit between his teeth. But I wouldn't rule out someone like Dan Robson maybe sneaking onto the tour and being a surprise package at 9. That'd be there's my 3.
Excellent.
What do you reckon, Phil?
John Cooney, first choice.
Oh, I love it. He was good.
I don't know. It's such a tough one. I really like the way that Dan Robson plays the game. I think he's class. I really like the way that Ben Spencer plays the game, but he's never been given that, never really. I mean, he won a World Cup with England, albeit he never really did anything because he played in a World Cup final with England, but it's been a long day. Played in a World Cup final with England, despite not doing anything during the tournament. I don't know. I'd probably agree with your rundown, Tim, but it still feels a bit unsatisfactory to me.
So we're saying Ben Youngs?
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then 10, Finn Russell with the guiding hand of Owen Farrell outside him could be...
Imagine that.
Could be.
I can't see... I don't think you're going to get the best out of either player in that scenario.
I mean, it could work beautifully or it could be an absolute disaster.
What are the other options at 12 that would mean
Sexton and Farrell?
You tuck Owen Farrell in at 10. Bigger Farrell.
What about Farrell at 10 and Finn at 12?
Finn sanity.
No, we need Finn Russell on the bench for Finn sanity when South Africa are 30 points to 5 up with 20 minutes to go. It's time.
Yeah, it's time. Push the button. I struggle to look past Farrell and Sexton.
Oh, but Sexton's still...
Yeah.
36 by the summer, maybe.
But, like, he's never been fast. He's never been strong. So, what you know, all he is more experienced. And that can't be a bad thing for a 10.
But I don't think he's... I would even go as far as to question whether he is the best performing 10 at Leinster at the moment.
That's fair. Ben Diaki is a guy who I think could offer something for the Lions. A bit more of a bigger, bruisier centre. Outside of that, you're really struggling. 12 across all four nations is not particularly good. Who plays there for Scotland? Johnson.
Duncan Taylor sometimes.
Yeah, Johnson. Australian
yeah.
Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you look at Jonathan Davis moving into 12.
JD 2.
Oh, he did. He did in one of the recent games, didn't he? Because North played 13.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, he's a very good player.
Could Nick Tompkins get himself on the tour?
He doesn't feel like a Lion, does he?
So, this is a brilliant question. It flags a problem that we've all raised in the past, that 9 and 12 are really significant issues. And I think is probably the best 12 or the best playing 12 most frequently in the best team in the home nations is Owen Farrell, but that creates other problems if you play him there. It is a genuine issue.
Bigger Farrell. Just go all out on the Chopsy.
Oh, God, they'd never stop talking. Oh,
Chopsy 10 to 12.
Those two. I'm not sure that's the right... I mean, maybe Ford Farrell is the best combination.
Oh, God, imagine that.
Might be.
Yeah, might be.
Might be. Clear as mud on that one. Any more, JB?
I'll say, I'm going to nail my colours to the mast for 10-12 as Farrell Henshaw.
Cool.
I have no idea, so I'm not going to say anything yet. So I'm just going to say, have I said thank you to Oliver Cousins, probably? John Rumbalski.
It sounds like a New York cop.
He definitely is a New York cop.
Have you got Rum, what was his name?
Rombalski?
Rombalski. Is Rombalski on the case?
I mean, he works alone, so we wouldn't know, would we?
Yeah. Your new partner is Rombalski.
Alex Albertine, Steve Jones, the Steve Jones.
Yeah, T4 F1.
The Art Barbers Birmingham.
When I heard Tier 4, by the way, that's all I thought about was June Sarpong on a Sunday morning.
Now, something's happened. I'm blaming you for this, Tim, because you hang around with these types of people. But someone has got the Egg Chasers emailing list, and somehow a PR company keeps on sending us bloody emails about things like Art Barbers in Birmingham. I'm not going to go to the barbers in Birmingham. They sent me a email to the Egg Chasers email the other day about low-calorie chocolate, to which I said, we are a rugby podcast. What makes you think this will be of any interest to us whatsoever?
I mean, they might have heard the podcast and heard us talking about the Exeter haircuts to make us send barbers offers.
I mean, quite possible. Quite possible. The last email is from Piers Dixon, and he's got numerous questions, so it's a good one to finish on. So, hope you are all well. A couple of ideas for improving the game, i.e. making it more exciting, therefore more appealing to a bigger audience through
naked
running, passing, tries, etc. Disgusting. So, and he put, sorry, JB. Okay.
Yeah.
One, make pitches 10-20% wider. More space, more line breaks, more fatigue, more tries.
I get the thinking with that. You're limited, obviously, with the current footprint of stadiums. But I like the idea.
I love this little caveat. Though maybe not practical for clubs lower down the league. No. Very practical for clubs lower down,
but less necessary for clubs lower down.
Yeah. But very, very impractical if you've just built Sandy Park. I mean, you're going to struggle. So I like the idea. I don't think you can increase the size of Welford Road.
If you could click your fingers and make it happen, that I would be all for that.
Yeah.
Wider, anyway, not necessarily longer, but wider.
Okay. Two, scrums. Penalties from scrums outside the 22 cannot result in a kick at goal. If a handling error on the halfway line potentially results in conceding 3 points, how does this encourage passing, offloads, etc.? Quick taps and kicks for touch only.
So, the principle of that, I'm not against. I'm not sure exactly the right way to solve this. But it's a good point that the penalty, well, as we saw in the Munster-Clermont game this weekend, the penalty is so important as a method of scoring points. And it does seem disproportionate that a single infringement can lead to 3 points, whereas a sensational team try can lead to, well, only five potentially, or seven if you get the conversion. So I would be all for depowering the penalty. Now, whether you do that just by simply reducing the number of points, or this kind of solution where you can't take the three from certain areas, I'm not sure the best approach, but in principle, I'm for it.
So, my thoughts on this is the penalty for the scrum exists, so you are not tempted to collapse a scrum. If the penalties for collapsing a scrum was less severe than it is, you'd ironically have more collapsed scrums.
No, as in, so I think you could still kick the corner. You still give a penalty, kick the corner. You just can't take the three.
Yeah.
So I think if the three becomes less likely, then territory becomes more valuable. Therefore, you definitely don't want to collapse a scrum.
No. Well, okay. So let's run this through. You're under the pump in the scrum. Normally, what would happen is you would try and keep it up, or you do your best not to concede the penalty so you don't concede the 3 points, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you're allowed to just go for, if you're allowed to collapse it and then they can kick to the corner, but you have a better maul or line out, you're still in that game. So it is a better option for you to collapse that scrum. And to me,
but you said that you did put an if in there, as in if you are getting pumped in the scrum, but if you have a better defensive maul, which does seem unlikely.
I just think that the penalty for collapsing a scrum should be pretty harsh if it's deliberate. It might even be yellow card territory, actually.
Well, maybe that's what you do. But I think if you get a scenario where 3 point is less likely, then territory becomes more important. So that penalty is actually arguably more severe because you're going to get more territory, therefore more likely to score tries.
Well, no, because you can have that anyway. All you're doing is narrowing down the choice.
I understand the thought of what the thinking is. I guess my point, my only thought here is, one of the beauties of the scrum, it adds another very different dynamic to a game, which means, and if I'm thinking about this, you know, in FIFA and Pro Evolution Soccer and stuff, when they have like a player and it has that almost spider web around them with the different attributes and you can stretch out it, the scrum requires a team to be able to not just be electrically quick and have amazing hands and have a good kicking game. It just requires another very different dynamic, which completely shifts. And consequently, when teams have to focus on, we have to have people that can go through that scrummaging process, it actually opens up space for other people in other ways and at other times.
Number three.
I don't think this law, the way that in my head it would be implemented, or this change would not eliminate the scrum. If anything, it would mean the scrum is still really important, but it would if anything, it's going to make scrums more important because you're going to keep the ball in play more, but you're just going to have fewer shots at goal.
But there you go, Piers. We've had that much of a discussion about that. It's a good talking point. And I can't wait till we're back in clubhouses and someone can chuck a question like this and we can all have a natter away. Piers also says stopping the clock for kicks at goal, which would add 10 to 20 minutes of ball in play time. Can I just say, actually, I'm absolutely shocked every time I see ball in play stats. And what was that?
Oh, yeah.
Because Exeter, for example, in the Champions Cup, I was doing my sort of research before last week's Ulster game, and Exeter have the highest ball in play, possession time of any team.
Yeah.
And Exeter's kind of average in the Champions Cup last season ball possession was 21 minutes.
Is it that low?
Yeah.
I didn't think I've normally got, like, in my head, high 20s. But
No. It's very low 20s is an unusually high ball in possession time. The normal kind of number you would expect is around about 18 minutes for each team, which means, if we're being honest, and this is why I think, actually, I can't remember the last time this stat was used on the telly, and I think part of it is...
I bet it's not, because people will be saying, I want my money back.
where the hell's the rest of my game?
So where's my rugby?
Weirdly, I disagree with this, with this point of view. Because I'm just, you know, completely... a complete contrarian for the sake of it, but...
But you are.
I mean, yes, that does happen. the NFL, which has the biggest sporting events of all sports, has loads of gaps. And it depends how you want to watch the game.
But NFL still has 60 minutes of action.
Yeah, it has guaranteed. 60 minutes of action, but spread far, far more thinly. So you can go out and get yourself a beer or snacks or whatnot. And because that, it really lends itself...
Or you can watch all the wonderful adverts.
Oh, love the adverts. Big fan of it. So it lends itself really well to all... It's a really good sport to watch in the background, if that makes sense. Now, I'm not saying we want rugby to be a sport to watch in the background. But actually, you know, if you want to get loads of people in, the reason the NFL is successful is, you know, it's embedded into the culture. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having a few more breaks so we can go get a few more beers and a few more snacks. Mm. I'm not that against it.
I'm against that, but I am definitely against the fact that in your average game, less than half of the 80 minutes, there's actually one team or other doing something with the ball. That's a pretty frightening stat.
If it's 21 minutes or 18 minutes, it's less than a quarter of that period of time.
Oh, yeah,
that's
one team, but so then you double that for two
teams.
Oh,
okay.
Actually, what are they doing for the rest of the time?
Well, the rest of the time, they're wiping a ball before they throw it into a line-out. The referee's having a natter with them about a reset scrum. They're kicking conversions.
Maybe less, a minute and a half.
Maybe
making your kicks
a rugby game 30 minutes each way, but with a properly regulated clock.
Yeah. I think...
There's some merit in that.
Because, I mean, if you're only getting 20-something minutes of ball and play time, if you get 30 minutes...
No, not 20 minutes. So, again, double. Exeter have possession, so 20 minutes each. Yeah.
So, you know, if you increase this to 30 minutes each, and it's guaranteed because we're timing it, there you go.
Or referees, get the bloody game going.
Yes, or do you do that?
Yeah. Sorry, I was just going to say, Tim, to your point about Exeter being the highest, having the most ball in play time, if you haven't listened to it yet, listen to JB's wonderful interview with Rob Baxter.
Correct.
I think it's on the Rugby Dungeon feed and the Egg Chasers feed.
Correct.
It is illuminating, and he does set out why that's that, why that is reality.
Correct.
Which is very interesting to hear.
100%.
Excellent. A kick directed into touch from anywhere results in a line-out, whereas a kick made... Sorry. A kick directed into touch from anywhere results in a line-out where the kick was made, encouraging kicks in play, running exits, counter-attacks.
So even inside your 22, you can't exit to touch?
Yeah, now Rob Baxter made this point, and I can't remember what he said, but basically he said, yeah, that's why they should reverse the law so we can kick it from anywhere. Because, what did he say? I can't remember.
Because it would, it's...
Yeah, so what the...
Because
yeah.
it disincentivises kick tennis.
Well, I think what he said is something along the lines of, if you want great attacking ball, forcing the opposition to kick it in the 22 is a really good way of doing it, because your best attacking option is often a line-out. So you get a good attacking line-out on the halfway, which is ideal. Whereas if you could kick it outside of your 22, you might actually be able to... You're more likely to play it out, I think is what he was saying. Because you'd play it out... At the moment, you won't play out your 22, will you? I mean, I think a disaster...
Yeah.
Is playing 1 yard out your 22 and then kicking it, because you can't get...
Yeah, points. Quite often teams pass back into the 22 to set up another ruck so that they can then exit with a kick.
Yeah.
If you could just kick it anywhere, you might want to play out to see how it goes. Okay, we're out. Well, you know, that didn't cost us anything. We don't have to play it back into the 22. Just kick out from here.
Interesting point, though, because the rule used to be you could kick into touch from anywhere and it would just be a line out.
Yeah,
then they changed it to only inside the 22. Otherwise, it's from in line with where the kick was made. It'd be interesting to. I wonder how that would change it if any kick to touch directly. Presumably, if you kicked it along the ground, you could still, or it bounced beforehand, that would still be fine. But if you kicked it directly into touch from anywhere, I wonder how that would change the game.
So in my head, you would get far fewer of the kick tennis type scenarios, because it's much easier to kick into touch.
And
however,
it will, again
in my head, under current laws, it will drop the ball in play time, because you will have far more lineouts that will take a minute and a half for all the players to get in the right position, the hookers to dry the ball, everyone to get set up.
Because people wouldn't kick it to touch. No, I'm saying, what if you meant that even if you kicked it from inside the 22 directly to touch, it's still was a line out from wherever the ball was kicked.
Oh, okay. So if it's that, okay, so we're not going back to the old. So it's more of the new, if
more,
anything.
More of the new. The whole pitch is no kick directly to touch. Well, you can kick directly to touch, but the line out is from where you kicked it.
So I think that would risk even more kick tennis potentially.
Yeah, because you don't want to get it out, do you? So you just hoist
you it can't out. You can't ever get it out.
Yeah, you can't ever get it out. The flip side is you would definitely keep all three back three players at least back at all times.
Or one Lee Halfpenny.
Yes, that is fair, Tim. And that's the I can't remember what they called it, 50-22 or whatever it was.
Is that a law that I haven't seen a single one? Is that actually a law now?
They trialled it in, was it Super Rugby AU?
Oh, and they
trialled
it.
I watched a couple of games, but I can't really remember it very much. But yeah, that the consequence of that is you have to keep three in the backfield, or at least two in the backfield.
Which, if you were a team like Bristol, who have a crack from anywhere anyway, that would be game on. You can imagine Johan Lloyd or Piatow or something, or Randra.
Yeah, or Malins or Randra.
For number five.
Yeah.
Number five, power plays. Oh, sorry. So have we agreed to kick it out or not kick it out? I think it's fine.
It depends what you're going for. If you just want ball in play time, if it means a line out back from where you kicked it, wherever you kick it from, that is going to increase ball in play time, because no one is ever going to kick it out.
Yeah, that is true.
But there's going to be a lot of kick tennis for that ball in play time.
Yeah, you're right.
A lot of high defense. Okay. So five, power plays. At any point in the game, if a team is losing, they call a power play, where the opposition has to take one back and one forward off the field for 10 minutes. If they pull ahead, the other team can call their power play right back. Chaos ensues.
I think instead of this, Finsanity is what you're going for.
We've already...
Yes.
Yeah, we've already discussed this, haven't we? And we've already got... And now that Danny Cipriani is looking for work, we've actually got a pool of... We've got, as Phil would say, we've got Finsanity himself and a Finpersonator.
How could you... So in cricket, in one-day cricket, they have... in 2020 cricket, is it, or in one-day cricket, they have power overs where the batting side can say... You have to keep all but one fielder or something that inside the ring.
That's right.
Yeah.
So there are ways you could do that. So,
but you could just say you can't defend in the fifth, in the 5 inch channels.
If there was a rugby equivalent of that that you could do,
So there's actually a game like this. So the defending team are only allowed in the 5 meter channels once the ball is there and only with one man. So you're playing five metres in, where the line-out is, to 5 metres in. And then maybe you could expand that to 15 to 15, so you'd have a really condensed defence. And then as soon as the ball is played wide, you can then detach one of your wings, who can then go and cover.
Yeah.
It should be that only the number 15 can defend in the 5 metre channel.
Yeah.
But he has to defend both 5 metre channels.
Oh my word, imagine that.
So it's just like with full pitch shuttle runs for
he's like a rook in chess. He's sweeping up.
As soon as he makes a tackle, other players can come into the rook.
Or maybe maybe the back three are the only guys that can defend. Because in reality, he's going to defend there, but he's going to be chasing the last man, isn't he?
To combine the last 2 points together, I don't know whether you could like power play it and have some sort of kicking advantages or not. I don't know. No,
so, yeah,
I mean, this is all bonkers. This is what that rugby tens tournament or that should try out some of this bonkers stuff. Yeah.
So just to add some more context to Finsanity, which obviously is a great project, you could have Finn, Danny Cipriani and Ryan Lamb. And as the game progresses...
Shane Geraghty.
Shane Geraghty. I mean, not quite the same league, but yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah. Carl Spencer.
Tom Quade Cooper.
Yes, there we go. And basically, every 5 minutes, you introduce a different one on, and you do it by just by random lottery draw. So Finn Russell might be replacing a tight head, and then Ryan Lamb comes on at fullback, and then Quade Cooper replaces the second role.
Yeah, if it was done like lotto balls, like you have to change. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, lotto balls. You have to change. You have a Quade Cooper or a Sippers or whatever, and you pull out a ball for the shirt that they're changing with.
Courtney Laws off, Quade Cooper on.
Yeah,
I mean, it changes the attitude of your pack somewhat, doesn't it?
It does. Anyway, I think that pretty much comprehensively answers that question.
Yeah. And lastly, Perfect. Six. This is the last one for us all. What is with England's long-running dearth of quality 12s? Surely some of our 35 world-class flankers or 13s could become a 12 instead.
Alfie Barbary.
I think that's fine. I think you've...
Done.
There we go. So thank
Perfect.
You.
Perfect.
There are some forwards which have incredible hands. Ben Earl could be a centre.
Yeah, he could be.
Yeah.
He's got great hands. Sam Simmons could be a centre. There you go. This is how we use these guys that Eddie Jones says aren't big enough. Sam Simmons or Ben Earl. Well, obviously Ben Earl was in the England squad, so that's not a point. But yeah, them as a centre. Basically, yes, Eddie is right. Hybrid rugby players is the way forward.
There we go.
Jack Knoll 7, Sam Simmons 12. Done. World Cup winners.
Perfect. Well done, everyone. So thank you for emailing in. If you email in... Well, if you carry on doing it at this volume, at least, we can do one of these monthly, I'd guess.
Yeah, good idea. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. DM on Twitter @rugbypodcast. Just one final word. If you're listening to this before Christmas, have a wonderful time with whoever you're able to spend it with. And thank you for spending some of your time this week, this month, this year, or however long you've been listening to the podcast. We really appreciate it. And thank you very, very much. We wish you and yours a wonderful and hopefully restful time as well.
There we go.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics, all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.